Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, from the remote jungles of Clinton Falls, Indiana. This is Larry Batson, and you're listening to Larry Batson's Wild World. Wildlife Educational Services and the SRI Label Group presents Wild World on this magical network called Blog Talk Radio. From deepest, darkest Africa, across the polar ice cap, spanning the jungles of South America without a compass, without a map. This is Larry Batson inviting you to join us for the next 1 hour for fun and education with Dr. Henry Day, the Wild World News staff. A big thank you to Shelley Leibowitz and the SRI Label Group, presenting Larry Batson's Wild World. Hello, Dr. Day.
Good afternoon, Mr. Batson. How are things?
Beautiful day in the neighborhood.
Yes, it is. We got a little bit of mist falling right now. It rained off a couple times today, but we enjoyed it because we needed it.
We did. We've got an exciting guest today. We hope he calls in.
That's right, yeah.
Larry Wilcox from the television show Chips. So we'll see what happens here today. So what's going on in the world of Dr. Henry Day?
Well, it's a nice Sunday afternoon. I don't know if I told you or not, I caught another snake.
Well, you did.
And a giant salamander.
Oh, what kind of salamander? Tiger?
Well, I'm not really sure because I haven't been able to identify it. I found several here on the property, and this one was about 8 inches long, tire black with a light spotted belly.
Well, it might be a color phase of the marbled salamander.
Yeah, I don't know. It was quite large for it, the species.
You know, that was when I was growing up, we found a giant tiger salamander down in our basement one time. And, of course, that was the beginning of my animal career. So I decided to keep it, and I set up a little area for it and so forth. And it got out, obviously, escaped. And even after the entire Batson family was searching and searching and searching, we never found it.
Well, I caught a lot of salamanders when I was growing up also here in Indiana. And one day I had a jar of salamanders, probably a dozen. And I set them on a picnic table in the shade. Well, I took off, came back a couple hours later. Well, they were in the sun. Been that way for a while. And they were kind of dried up. So I didn't have any other choice. I rehydrated them, and believe it or not, they came back. They were little sticks, and they came back to life.
You know, that reminds me of the film footage that I saw in Africa where this torrential downpour monsoon moves into these areas, and what was dry, hard mud all of a sudden becomes quite wet, and then frogs just pop out. And that's the starting of their life cycle.
Yeah, when I was stationed in El Paso, we had the spadefoot toads there, and I only got a couple inches of rain a year. And for a couple of weeks, you had toads and frogs and tadpoles. After that, they were gone. You didn't see them again until next year.
Oh, man. Well, so are you ready for the Wild World News here on a magnificent Sunday?
I think I'm ready.
Oh, cool. Wildlife Educational Services and the SRI Label Group presents Dr. Henry Day and the Wild World News from the Wild World News headquarters in Indianapolis, Indiana. Now HD and brand new offices for its entire staff. As we always say, he kind of leans to the left, but he's always right. Dr. Henry Day.
Why, good afternoon. You're Larry the Animal Guy, aren't you?
Yes, I am. Someday.
Yeah, yeah. do the Wild World News for July 22nd.
Cool.
Now, I don't know if you heard about this, but this is pretty tragic. The Audubon Zoo in New Orleans was closed over the weekend. A three-year-old male jaguar named Valerio escaped its habitat and killed 9 animals. Yeah, Valerio attacked and killed 5 alpacas, 3 foxes, and 1 emu. Now, no humans were harmed, but Valerio was finally sedated and returned to his enclosure.
Well, you know, jaguars are tough.
That they are.
We had a chance to raise one and use one of our school programs one year, and he was, of all the big cats we work with, they were the greatest challenge by far, without a doubt.
Well, the muscle structure on those things, you know, I think the name jaguar means leaping death.
Well, you consider an animal that can carry more than its body weight up into a tree. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
But they have the strongest jaws of any of the big cats.
I happened to see one time in the wild when I lived in Panama, and it was a spectacular sight. It covered, I'm going to say 50 yards in 3 leaps, and it was back in the jungle. So that was my only experience with that. Jaguar. All right,
wow.
Let's catch our listeners up on some news reported a couple of weeks ago off of Sandy Hook, New Jersey. Rescuers were able to save a humpback whale that's been entangled in fishing line and nets for months.
Well, I can't even imagine what a job that must have been.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's give them a hand because the humpback is fine and on its own now.
That's fantastic news.
All right, for our listeners in Florida, I check the local beaches before you go swimming. Fernandina Beach, Florida, the beach has been closed for the last few days because of shark attacks. And they're happening just a few minutes apart, so somebody's cruising through the neighborhood. They're looking for a bite to eat.
You know, that's... I know you saw the movie Jaws.
Many times.
In fact, I remember my late friend Bob Olson said even after he walked out of that theater after watching that, he was even had fear when he looked in the toilet. The sharks live in the ocean, so we have to, you know, be cool.
That's right. And if somebody screams shark, I'm heading towards the water instead of away from the water because that is one of the best seafoods out there.
That's right. Always think about your appetite.
Yeah, 6-foot black tip, white tip shark. Oh, the beautiful fillets, no bones. But anyway, we're doing the Wild World News. Let's get on with this. Well, their beak can hold more than their belly can. Bismarck, North Dakota, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service says nearly 29,000 American white pelicans have returned to nest in south central North Dakota. 29,000 pelicans. Yeah, that is pretty awesome.
You know, that's incomprehensible. That's unbelievable. Imagine that, 29,000 birds. My goodness. And big birds at that.
Yeah, really big birds.
And my question, once again, is who counted all those 29,000?
Well, there was 3 guys, and they had paper with them. Yeah,
well,
that's what job to do, but that's why we have wildlife officials out there just to do that job.
That's right.
All right, we're going to call this next story Grapes of Wrath. Branford, Connecticut. A woman says she found a black widow spider in a package of grapes from her local grocery store. I would be excited about that.
I would be too. I kept the black widow for a couple of years in a aquarium.
And if you remember many years ago, one of your television shows, I had a pet black widow that I brought back from El Paso with me, and she lived, I guess, 7 or 8 years, but she was a television star.
I do remember that. Yeah, our old show, Amazing World.
That's right. Yep.
Yeah.
All right, let's run off to Delaware, shall we?
A
loggerhead sea turtle, which is federally listed as endangered and threatened species, has laid eggs in the state for the first time since 2011. Fenwick Island Beach, the officials say. Turtles come ashore, laying eggs. They're pretty happy about it.
I'll bet. That'd be a cool thing to see, you know?
Yeah, I got to see it one time in Panama, and it was during low tide, and the phosphorus in the water was just spectacular. As you walked along the beach and kicked the sand would glow, and then we noticed turtles starting to lay their eggs, and yep, I'm glad I got to witness it.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Now for our listeners in Lincoln, Nebraska, several bats have been tested positive for rabies.
Mm.
So we're sending out a signal to our friends. Now, if you don't want to get rabies, stop playing baseball.
Oh, that was so sad.
Oh, no, not those kind of bats. Yeah, you're right. All right, we're going to send out a get well to April. Groton, New Hampshire, April Rogers, 71, was attacked by a bear in her house during the middle of the night.
Oh.
Now, Rogers, who was in a wheelchair, survived but suffered injuries, as you can imagine, that required surgery. So, April, we're sending out our best to you. Get well, please. And I know she's going to have a tough time sleeping for the next few nights.
I'll bet. My goodness.
You can't imagine that. All right, we're off to Meteetse, Wyoming. Biologists plan a release of black-footed ferrets in Park County there. Now, we've talked about this before. The ferrets were endangered. They're bringing them back to the wild, and we're pretty happy about these cute little guys. Now, you've probably worked with ferrets before, haven't you?
Oh, yeah. Not the black-footed, though, the European ferrets. Hello.
Hello.
Okay. That's all I have to say.
All right. Well, are you ready for the local news? Have you heard about this? About the new spider discovered in an Indiana cave?
No.
We have a tiny, tiny, brand new spider discovered here in Indiana. Now, it's an entirely new species. It is now identified as Islandiana luisi. Now, it's so new, it doesn't have a common name, and it needs a common name because I don't enjoy pronouncing that name. But the spider is tiny, 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 tiny. Now, several of them were collected from their webs, and they're so tiny, their webs are only the size of a postage stamp.
Wow, my goodness. No wonder it took so long to discover it.
The webs are built between the cave's boulders. Now, as far as they know, this newly discovered spider does not exist anywhere outside of Indiana. So local wildlife personnel and biologists are pretty excited.
Oh, that's cool. Man, that's a fantastic story.
All right, well, it's time to play Who's Gotten Older?
Oh, I always do so terribly at this game. But,
I can always come on.
Yeah.
All right, now, we got some fun ones today. You should be able to do pretty good on this.
Okay.
Guitarist Spencer Davies of the Spencer Davies Group.
I'll say 72.
Well, I'm going to guess 79 because Spencer Davies turned 79 on Tuesday this week. And I would
not have
guessed
him. Don't you have a piece of paper there with all the answers on it?
Well, yeah, I guess I do, yeah. So I'm going to win all of these.
Yes, you are. Not unless I beat you to it.
All right. Singer George Clinton, We Want the Funk, Parliament Funkadelic. How old do you think George is today?
Oh, I'll say 81.
Well, you're a lot closer than I would have thought. George turned 77 today.
Oh, well, good for George.
And he's having neck problems from all of the stuff he wears in his hair. All right. Now, here's one. I'm sure you'll remember. This one, how old do you think Bobby Sherman is?
Oh, now that's a tough one. I'm saying he's probably 68, 69.
Well, he would like you for that because Bobby turned 75 today.
Well.
Yep, I wouldn't have guessed it either, but Bobby's 75. All right, now, you know this singer. I'm going to give you his name now, and you tell me who it is. Singer Yusuf Islam.
Oh, that would be Cat Stevens.
That is correct.
Oh, that should be worth more points.
Yeah, you get extra points for that. How old do you think Cat Stevens earned yesterday?
73.
Oh, close, 70.
Oh, well.
Yeah, and I say I wouldn't have guessed
Wild
him quite
world.
That old. I have to say I had two for the Tillerman in 1970, so yeah, I guess if you added it all up. All right, guitarist Brian May of Queen.
That's another tough one. I'll say 71.
Oh, I hate to tell you this, but you got it 100%. He turned 71.
Luck.
Well, now see, you just kind of put it all together. All right, bassist John Lodge of the Moody Blues.
Oh, 110. They're so old.
Yeah, they are old, but we still love them.
Yeah, that's kind of.
Take a stab at it.
Oh, I'll say 74.
Oh, he was 74 until Friday, and he turned 75.
Well, that was another lucky guess.
I got to give it to you. All right, singer Kim Carnes.
Now, that's a real tough one.
Yeah, I saw him not too long ago. Still pretty good.
I'll say Betty Davis Eyes, 70.
Ooh, well, Kim turned 73 on Friday, so I'm going to have to give it to you, and she probably thanks you for that.
You're welcome.
All right, well, someone we know and love, guitarist Carlos Santana.
Oh, man. 76.
Ooh, well, Carlos turned 71 on Friday.
Well, how old 71?
So, you did pretty good, yeah. You did pretty good this round.
Yeah,
all right, are you ready
completely.
For the fact of the day?
Ready as I'll ever be.
All right. The first animal to be ejected from a supersonic jet was a bear in 1962. Now, it parachuted safely to the ground, and you can bet that he did in the woods. And that's the Wild World News for July 22nd.
Well, once again, a great job done by Dr. Henry Day and the Wild World News staff in Indianapolis, Indiana, all HD. Knotty pine paneling. It really helped the acoustics, Dr. Day. Quite impressive.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, some Wildlife Educational Services and the SRI Label Group. They help make it possible for Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio and the SRI Label Group. People that love all music, rock, jazz, blues, country. It is all there. Artists and their classic recordings, best of ELO. Little Richard Live, a catalog of thousands of recordings available for download or just to listen to. Amazing music collection at the best musical site, SRI Label Group. Well, from 1977 to 1983, Larry Wilcox played Officer John Baker on the popular television show Chip. But his life has been an adventure far beyond television, a Marine fighting in Vietnam, a record holder at the Bonneville Salt Flats, yet he did his own stunt on Chip. And he didn't show up.
Oh. Well, he would have loved that intro.
I think he would have, but he didn't make it. So we'll hang around for a bit. I have a suspicion that's not going to happen, but we'll try. Here I am, the Barium Sunset from the SRI Label Group right here on Blog Talk Radio.
It's the only thing you should know, that I'm here. the only thing you should know that I'm here to stay forever and ever and ever. Cause
said, here I am. This is Larry the Animal Guy, Larry Batson, Blog Talk Radio. I had phone contact with his wife.
And is everything okay?
Well, there was some confusion because he's on the West Coast, and I, even though I said Eastern Standard Time, sometimes they forget. So, we still might get that call. In case we might get that call, more from Shelley Leibowitz and the SRI Label Group here on Blog Talk Radio. Group. This is Larry Batson, the animal guy. This is Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. Should we give him one more try, Dr. Day?
Is it time?
We'll give him exactly 5 minutes and 25 seconds. Here's Ray Brown from the SRI Label Group on Blog Talk Radio.
In 1983, Larry Wilcox played Officer John Baker on the popular television show Chip. But his life has been an adventure far beyond television, a Marine fighting in Vietnam to a record holder at the Montebello Salt Pan.
And yes, he did his own stunt on chips. Guest, Larry Wilcox. Hi, Larry.
Hey, sorry, I was distracted and I screwed up. My fault.
That's
sorry,
quite all right.
Calling in late.
That's all right. Good
well,
to
I
have
apologize.
You on the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I'd like to introduce to you our co-host, the Honorable Distinguished, leaning to the right, left some days, the Honorable Distinguished Dr. Henry Day.
Good afternoon, Mr. Wilcox.
Good afternoon. Can I call you Henry?
You sure can.
All right.
First of all, I'd like to thank you for your service, Larry. You guys led a tough road.
Yeah, when you're young and naive, in Wyoming anyway, where I grew up, you think you're joining the best outfit, meaning the Marine Corps, and you're going to be trained well, and when you end up in Vietnam, it's like, what in the hell am I doing here?
everybody says that, and then I've got our good friend, he went back two more times, he re-upped
it. Yeah, I can understand it, because there's a part of you that gets this adrenal rush, and it's a different kind of adrenal rush when your life's at stake, but I think people get addicted to that, and so I understand that, and sometimes it's, I suppose, altruistic, that they're thinking they're doing the great thing for their country, and other times it's adrenal, and other times it's you cement relationships that you'll never have again in your life that are just amazing, that people will give their life for you and you can trust them.
I agree.
I know. And my conversations with him, of course, I'm an animal person, and I'd always ask him what kind of animals he saw in Vietnam. I'll ask you the same.
The only thing we saw were snakes sometimes and water buffalo we saw everywhere, you know. But we were way up in the north on the DMZ, so people were the Montyards, which were like cavemen, you know. They just had a leaf on them, and that's about it. And they had old wagons with the wooden wheels, and if they're really, really lucky, they had a water buffalo. But other than that, I didn't see any animals.
He said that the water buffalo was your friend.
Yeah, they were. The water buffalo were, well, there are two kinds of water buffalo, by the way. There's the, it's a term, a verbiage issue. The water buffalo that the Marine Corps had was when the Sikorsky would come out and drop a little metal water buffalo, we called them, which was a water trailer full of water. And the Marines would get hot water or warm water, and the Army, they would get cold beer. It wasn't. It was not fair. But we used to joke when the Marines, you know, with our ego, they'd say, hey, the Army's down there on our perimeter, and then we'd say, well, then we're not staying here if they're on our perimeter. Because that's like having the enemy on your perimeter.
Oh, my goodness.
But it was military jokes.
Well, it's and I always feel so badly for the guys that come back from Vietnam, and soldiers now get a much better welcome or greeting. I think the Vietnam vets are now being more appreciated.
Yeah, I think so, too. It's just a time in history. It was an ugly time, and I unfortunately landed in San Francisco where that was all happening when I came back from Vietnam. But I always tell the story that even though they were chanting ugly slogans and spitting and stuff, I got into a taxi to go see my brother, and I was a little worried because, you know, you don't have that much money in the military, and was I going to be able to pay for the taxi and so on. And when I got there, the taxi driver said, I said, how much I owe you? And he says, nothing. Thank you very much for your service. And there are a lot of us that are really proud of what you've done for us. And so I almost started crying, man. It was like, wow. Thank you.
Well, that's very humbling. Very humbling. My goodness.
Yep. Yep.
So we're going to talk a little bit about Chips. What kind of motorcycles did you guys ride? I don't remember. The Moto Guzzis or Harleys or?
No, we rode a Kawasaki 1000s. We started with a Kawasaki 900, which was a wonderful bike, a lot of torque, chain driven. Then we went the next year or two to the Kawasaki 1000, a little more powerful, but not as much torque. And then we went to the Chips Reunion. We did the BMWs, which were shaft driven and lots of torque, but not a bike you want to be doing stunts on.
Well, you said, do you still ride to this day?
Yeah, still ride. I mean, once you've ridden, it's kind of like a bicycle, so it's no big deal. But I had to go ride in a parade recently, and I didn't even have a helmet anymore. So I had to wear my old Chips helmet. It was a little corny. And I wore my Chips helmet and went down there, and the clutch didn't work very well, and I was kind of like rolling through red lights, and I was going, oh, dude, this is not good, you know. But it worked out good in the end.
Well, you did all your own stunts on Chips, I've heard. Is that the truth?
No, we did most of them. I mean, but the really real stunts, did I ride in the rodeo and do that? Yeah. Did I ride the jet skis? Yeah. Did I do my fight sequences on top, tied off on buses, going 30 miles an hour? Yeah. Did you wreck the motorcycle and flip it and all that? No. Did you do the fire sequences when you're on fire? No. Did you jump off that bridge onto that moving bus? No. So it's a little bit of
I've forgotten about all those things.
Yeah, actors like to brag about them doing their stunts, but, it's really not smart because if you get hurt, then the show's shut down, you know?
All right.
But some of them I did.
Well, we were in Hollywood years ago, and I was talking to a gentleman who was a stuntman, and he'd recently retired, and the scene was a car, he was standing, and a car was sliding across the asphalt, and it hit him. And he says, you know, if you duck or if you flinch or do anything, your career in stunts are over. He says, I broke about every bone in my body just to stay in that one spot to do that stunt. So,
yeah. Yeah, it's, I don't know how those guys, when they get older, they're really broken up. I mean, we literally hit pedestrians with a moving car and flip guys over with no helmet or anything and break the windshield with their head and, it's like, wow. I mean, I did a Western once called The Last Ride of the Dalton. The Last Hard Men with James Colburn and Charlton Heston. And they had the guys rolling under, the stunt guys doing the stunt, where they had to roll under in between the wheels as the train's moving quickly. So, one, two, three, bam. And if you miss, it's over. It was like, wow. And one guy, when they rolled under, his name was Brubaker, I remember, when he got underneath there, then you had to grab a hold of the bottom of the train and pull yourself up. And he couldn't get his legs up, and it tore half his butt off. I mean, it just felt like that. It's just awful. So they do some hairy stunts. No.
Oh, my God. I can't even imagine. Lord.
Yeah, me neither.
And you're a race car driver, according to Wikipedia, is that correct?
Yeah, I raced. I really enjoyed racing. I kind of got my bug when I did those celebrity races and those little Toyotas, Supras and stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, you go 120 miles an hour and could kill yourself. So it was. But then I went to all the race schools, the Bob Bondurant race school and the Jim Russell race school. And, you know, I learned a lot in those. And then I raced rabbits for a couple years, a little Volkswagen rabbit. There all were, maybe 15 of them on a Laguna Seca or a racetrack that is a good competitive track, all sounding like little bumblebees at 100 miles an hour against each other, and everybody's trying to tap you and hit you and get you spun out of the racetrack, kind of like NASCAR. And so it was a good teaching ground. And then I raced off-road for many years, where we did Class 8 trucks in the Baja 1000. And that's just really hard on you. Those, you know, you're going 130 miles an hour in some places, and other places 2 miles an hour over treacherous cliffs and rocks. And I made a lot of mistakes, jumped cliffs and shouldn't have, and broke trucks in the middle of the desert, and urinating blood because it's just so hard on your kidneys and stuff, you know.
It's so much fun, though.
Yeah, it was masochistic, but it was fun.
Okay, I have a question. Well, IndyCar or NASCAR?
I like Indy. I've always liked Indy because open wheel to me is much more interesting, and I know that NASCAR is a bigger sport right now because Indy kind of screwed up a while back in all their public relations and stuff. But I just love IndyCar racing, and although I really like Formula One because I think Formula One's more difficult than an oval track, but Indy's still great.
Have you been to the Indianapolis 500?
I have. It was just start your engines. It was pretty impressive, and a lot of adrenaline, and a lot of great people, and a lot of drunks.
A lot of drugs. Oh, I can remember having a debate with some good old boys about NASCAR. They were saying how the Indianapolis 500 doesn't compare to Daytona. And I asked them, I said, have you been to the Indianapolis 500? Because I've been there many times. We're about an hour from it from here. It's in Dr. Day's backyard. And I said, that first opening lap on the Indianapolis 500, nothing challenges it as far as excitement. Nothing.
Yeah, it is. I really enjoyed it, and it was I think Indianapolis is where the American Legion headquarters were or are, and I had done a speech there for veterans and prisoners of war, and then I got to go and do the Indianapolis 500, and then later I raced it, I think, Watkins Glen and another celebrity thing, which was really fun. But there's nothing like Indy, you're right. My son went to school in Indiana at a little Catholic school called Ancilla. It's out in the middle of nowhere, and then this big, magnificent church. Like, what? Where'd that come from? But it's a really good little soccer school there, and we met some great people in Indiana.
Yeah, it's a fine state. Lived here my entire life. It's just great. Bonneville Rock Flats. You have a record. You're a record holder.
Yeah, we did. It's more publicity than I take credit for, to be honest with you. I flew back from France to set 8 international land speed records at the Bonneville Salt Flats, but what did I do? You know, if you just say that title, it sounds pretty impressive. Wow, Larry, you said 8 international at Bonneville? Yeah, at the Salt Flats?
Yeah.
What'd you drive? A 4-cylinder LN7 Mercury? Oh, how fast is that? 154 miles an hour, somewhere thereabouts. I think it was 157. But in the Salt Flats, there's no trees or posts, so you don't have any sense of speed other than the RPMs, you know, at the highest point you can get it to. So it wasn't a big deal. I mean, it was, I guess, a big deal for that little car to go that fast. And Bill Stropp, who's kind of a famous mechanic car guy, he set the car up, and it was really about Bill Stropp, and he just was leveraging me and publicity a little bit, which was fun. But while I was doing that, and you have to have all the officials and everybody there, also was the Craig, what's his last name? I can't think of it right now, who was with his jet car, you know, going, I don't know, how many hundreds of miles per hour. So mine was like a wannabe.
Well, even still, 150-some miles an hour, Jesus, it's fairly quick.
Yeah. Well, it gets your attention
when you're
going into a corner.
When I was young and dumb, when we used to race motocross for trophies, I had a Husqvarna 8-speed, and you never had a chance to get it in the 8th gear until that giant Coke field by the Indianapolis 500. I took it over there one day, and I got it in 8th gear as fast as it would go, and it was close to 100 miles an hour, but it felt more like 200. I thought, my gosh, somebody get killed going this fast.
Speaking of
crazy, you were a rodeo cowboy?
Yep. All my family were cowboys, you know. I grew up in Wyoming. They rode Saddle Broncs mostly in Cheyenne Frontier days and some of the big rodeos, and then broke horses. And even my son, he ropes and broke horses. And I had him go to this cattle ranch to learn all that. It teaches you a lot about yourself, and how it really teaches you how to trust yourself, you know, versus trusting other people. And so I did it in high school, and then as I had more money, then I got into cutting horses and team roping and calf roping, and I enjoyed it. You know, I wasn't any world-class competitor, but I really enjoyed it, and to this day, I just love the life of a cowboy. It's just you and the livestock and the horses, and I even like, you know, like the farms in Indiana, all the tractors and equipment. I'm like a little groupie when I come around big equipment like that. That and aviation, both tractors and aviation I like.
What kind of planes did you fly?
I had a Navion, to answer your question, which is a military plane, a cockpit, and slides back and forth, and then we get upside down and retractable gear. We'd land in little grass fields and buzz surfers out on the ocean, give them a haircut. And we had a good time. I would take guys flying with me, and I'd say to you, you want to go through this canyon with me? And they'd say, I don't know. Is it okay? I thought, oh, yeah.
That's what I would say. No, I'd say, no, it's okay.
We'd fly through this canyon, you know, at 180 miles an hour, and on the deck, man, where you really feel the speed, you know, and then people say, hey, there's wires coming up, and boom, you pop up over the wires and then back down, then we would go out and find movie sets, and then we see a reflector out there where they were bouncing light onto the actor's face or something. Perfect. We'd turn that prop up as high as it go and dive bomb them and really get them upset with us because we ruined their set or their take, you know. And then we'd fly off. And then I flew back to Wyoming once, and in my little town in Rawlins, there's a state penitentiary. And so my airplane was built in 1949, so I can have little teeny numbers on it, so you can't really see my numbers, right? So I buzzed that penitentiary. All those convicts were out in whatever that yard's called where they hang out, and the light standers were moving back and forth like I just blew them off, man, and they just loved it. They just loved it, right? And I get back and land my airplane at the airport, and the guy says, hey, you know, we just got a call from the FAA saying some Navion buzzed a penitentiary. Was that you? I said, no, wasn't me.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
we had fun.
Pilots and cowboys, their mentality is very, very similar.
Yeah, you're right. Called dumb, as you said, dumb and young.
absolutely. But that's funny. So what are you up to now, Larry? You've led this exciting life. I know it continues to on and on and on.
Well,
once adventure.
Yeah, it's you know, I'm just hustling like every other human being in America. You know, what I'm doing is trying not to talk about politics anymore because it pisses me off so much that there's so much hatred and anger. And so I'm trying to stay away from that, number one. Making sure that I'm a good father and a good husband to my family, focusing on self-government instead of governing the world, if you will. Self-government's
yeah.
hard enough for it. And then, you know, I hope that, you know, I live in God's word, and I hope that I'm doing what he wants me to do, and that I'm resilient, and I'm doing technology mostly, and raising a bunch of capital for movies. So I have three large funds that are supposed to fund
oh, yeah.
me in the next couple of weeks. And in the next 2 weeks, if they do fund, then I'll have a bunch of money for technology, immersive technology, which allows you and I to actually be in 3D environments. And, you know, whether it's education or training or military or games or movies, it's immersive. And so we're excited about that. So that's what I'm focused on.
Well, that's exciting, and it's all right. Every time you have to work with corporations and so forth, that's just about as challenging as doing stunts on chips and rodeo riding.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. And, you know, when you're raising capital, there's just so many dangers of raising money. And the world is just a tapestry of legal landmines. And so it's...
Yeah.
You got to be careful, but we think we have it all set up, and we'll be able to help the world with some really neat technology and energy systems.
Wow.
Cool.
You were raised in Wyoming. I'm not familiar with where that town is. How far is that from, like, let's say, Yellowstone?
Well, the main towns in Wyoming are Jackson Hole up by Yellowstone, which is up in the top part
right.
of the state. And then on the bottom part of the state where I was at, south of the tracks, is Cheyenne, Wyoming, and then Laramie, Wyoming, and then Rawlins, Wyoming, and then Rock Springs, Wyoming, those little towns, and Evanston, Wyoming. They're all along the I-80 down there. And I lived in Rawlins, a little town of about, I don't know, maybe 6,000 or 7,000 people in the town. Where, you know,
those mountains are spiritual,
small town,
aren't they?
They are. It's, you know, it's a great place to grow up. You can go fishing and never see anybody and catch 40 fish. And
yeah.
So it's just a great, beautiful, pure environment. When I was there with my airplane, I had more fun looking at Wyoming from the air, and meaning 1,000 feet off the ground or so, and seeing wild mustangs racing through canyons, and, you know, elk and moose and antelope, and just beautiful, beautiful state. But that's the good part about it. And everyone thinks that Jackson Hole is magnificent, but you ought to be in any of those cities in Wyoming in the winter, because it's 40 degrees below zero and windy,
yeah.
windy. So it's tough,
yeah.
tough environment. As a rancher, you get one cutting, you know. So how do you even
sure.
make a living as a rancher? I don't know.
Do you ever get back there? Do you still have relatives in Wyoming?
No, I have. I do go. Probably the last time I was there, maybe 5 years ago, I flew my little airplane back there, and then I went to an event up in Lander, Wyoming, where all the Native American reservations are and stuff. But, you know, I don't go back there very much. There's just not much there for me. My family used to have a big cattle ranch there in Saratoga, Wyoming,
mm-hmm.
but no longer. So I don't have anything to go there for. I'm anxious to move right now, but I don't know where. I haven't figured out where I want my final nest to be, or multiple nests, but I'm going to move somewhere out of LA, that's for sure.
Well, there's this great America. I have a good friend who went up to Alaska here. Of course, that's the same deal. Freeze your rear off in the wintertime, a long winter.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
there's, gosh, so many magnificent places in this country. I have not had a chance to see them all, but
Yeah, it's my favorite place is Estes Park, Colorado. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that, Estes Park. I like Sun Valley in Idaho is really pretty, ranching area. Steamboat Springs, Colorado, I like. So I don't know. I don't know. I like Oregon, but I'm conservative in my politics, so that's a little communist China there, so I don't know.
Oh, okay.
But
hey, Larry.
Well, yes, sir.
Have you ever
go ahead, Dr.
Again?
Day.
I just asked, have you ever done a musical album?
I did a song once called that I made the mistake of believing my own press, and I sang a song called Me and My Love. And it was written by a famous writer, Carol Bayer Sager. And it tested really well, and they said, you got a hit on your hands. You got to go and sing it and do personal appearances, man. This is going to take off. And I had the old Wolfman Jack's Rack Jobbers helping me. And so I said, oh, man, I mean, I don't mind singing the song, but I'm not sure I want to be an entertainer. That's not my deal. And so I had to sing it on the Bob Hope Christmas special, and it was the lip sync I did was so bad. I told him, no, you can't play that. No way. I'm making an ass of myself in front of the world on a Bob Hope Christmas special. So that was the last of my music career, by the way.
Oh, that would do it for sure. My gosh. Well, Larry, we're so glad you had a chance to get in with us. Gosh.
Yeah, thank you guys for your time. And hang in there. God bless all of you. And may you have a good life. And thanks for listening to my stories.
Well, we
want
to have this opportunity
great.
Again. I know you're filled with them. My goodness. Great show, Dr.
Hanging out with an old friend.
Absolutely.
Hanging out with
thank
an
you,
old
Doctor.
Friend. Thank you, Larry.
Well,
great
thank
show.
You.
Thank you so much.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Hey, Frank, what is it most?
Like, man, I don't know. I just go eight. I make the ground shake, I go away.
Bum, bum, yada, bum, 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 bum.
Oh, the sports cars, man, like the Jaguar, I go away.
Bum, bum, yada, bum, 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 bum.
Sure, the most exciting movie show. Pickles and a mustard on a hot tub roll, I go away.
Bum, bum, yada, bum, 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 bum.
I go away.
Bum, bum, yada.
Listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio.